Finn Durandal was having an equally unsatisfying meeting with the clone representative Elijah Ducat in the secret laboratory Finn funded deep in the rotten heart of the Rookery. It was the only place such a lab could be kept entirely secret and properly guarded. And given what Ducat was doing, on Finn's instructions, the half-dozen long rooms set some distance under a main street were crammed full of the very latest tech. Some of it legal, only because no one had found out about it yet.
Negative. Could you have
that?
Interesting.
But that's all right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Ducat was all over the place. Okay. Literally. Okay. He'd cloned himself, quite illegally, and now there were nine of him. On the unanswerable grounds that he was the only person he could trust to work with on such a clandestine and dangerous project as this. Finn was also pretty sure there was a touch of narcissism involved in the decision, but he said nothing. He liked to know other people's vices and weaknesses. It made them so much easier to control. The clones darted back and forth around the lab, somehow never quite getting in each other's way, and occasionally moving in eerie symmetry. The original Ducat identified himself with a sloppy hat of no discernible style or purpose. He hovered uncertainly beside Finn as he strolled through the laboratory. Finn wasn't smiling. Ducat was sweating.
Well...
Finn let one hand trail dangerously close to some delicate-looking apparatus just to watch Ducat flinch.
How goes our little project? You've been very quiet just lately. I'd hate to think you've been keeping secrets from me.
Well, there's been nothing to tell.
He looked to his clones for support, but they were all busy being busy and keeping their heads down. Ducat glared at them venomously and then tried an ingratiating smile on Finn. It wasn't successful. Ducat dropped the grin and settled for being businesslike.
It's all been in my report, Sir Champion. Using your authority, my people sealed off the Victory Gardens behind the House of Parliament. There's never any shortage of terror scares to take advantage of. And then we dug up the graves of Jack Random and Ruby Journey. The preserved corpses were still in surprisingly good shape, and we were able to obtain good scent samples from both of them. We then destroyed the remains using transmutation bombs, following your instructions, to ensure that nobody else would be able to make use of the bodies, and then we filled in the graves again. No one saw anything, no one suspects anything. The men you supplied me with to do the actual hard labor, they have been taken care of, I trust? Oh, good, good. If word were to get out that we were trying to clone two respected heroes of the Great Rebellion, I'm pretty sure we would all be dragged through the streets and burned at the stake. This goes well beyond disrespect and into desecration and blasphemy.
You let me worry about things like that. You still haven't answered my question. How goes the work?
Ducat turned away to fiddle with some equipment so he wouldn't have to meet Finn's cold gaze.
You do ask a lot, Sir Durandal. First you wanted me to produce clones of Random and Journey that you could brainwash and control. Failing that, you wanted me to discover the source of their powers so that they could be bestowed on, persons of your choosing. Well, I and my other selves have run every test we can think of on the cell samples we took from the bodies, and I have to tell you, in my expert opinion, the whole project is a waste of everybody's time.
Ducat met Finn's gaze squarely, the effect only slightly spoiled by his trembling lower lip.
The whole thing's impossible! The genetic material involved has been so altered and transformed through contact with the madness maze that it doesn't respond to any of the established cloning procedures. There's nothing there we can work with.
Are you saying it isn't human tissue anymore?
I mean, it isn't any form of life I'm familiar with. It just doesn't make sense.
Send all the information you have to our Shub allies on Hayden. See if they can make anything of it. And calm yourself, Ducat. Hysteria is so unattractive in a scientist.
Ducat nodded quickly, and actually did relax a little. He'd been expecting a far worse reaction from Finn.
How is our James doing? Performing well, I trust? Giving no cause for concern?
Any reason he should be?
No, of course not. I was just asking. You know, according to certain records I uncovered in the Clone Underground's files, you weren't the first to suggest creating a clone of the dear departed James Campbell. It seems such an offer was made to the then King William and Queen Neum by my predecessor of that time. They could have produced a perfect clone to replace the deceased original, and no one need ever have known. but it seems the king and queen reacted very badly to the suggestion. The queen apparently said it would be an abomination, and that was the end of the Clone Underground's power and influence for a long time.
Did you follow up on my other suggestions? Tell me you've had some success there, at least.
I am afraid not, Sir Champion.
Dukat could feel small beads of sweat forming on his upper lip. He held his hands tightly together behind his back to keep them from shaking. Finn being so calm in the face of continual bad news was not a good sign.
I had the Victory Garden searched from end to end, using the most thorough equipment, but there was no trace anywhere of any remains of the late Captain Silence. His ashes may have been scattered over the Victory Gardens, but that was over a century ago. Yet none of his genetic material remains there. I'm sorry.
Well, let us not despair. I've had another idea that I thought we might try.
Finn reached inside his armor, and all the Dukat clones dove for cover in case it was a weapon. Dukat would very much have liked to have done the same, but he couldn't afford to appear weak in front of Finn Durandal. So he stood his ground as Finn's hand came out holding a test tube containing barely half an inch of clear liquid. Finn smiled at it fondly.
This is all that remains of the Esper drug I purchased from the estimable Dr. Happy. A most remarkable drug. I thought we might try it on the cell samples you have left. See if anything happens.
Dukat accepted the test tube gingerly, but knew better than to argue or appear less than enthusiastic. He stalked over to his other selves, only now reappearing from behind the more solid pieces of lab equipment, and bullied them into setting up the necessary conditions for the experiment.
Ah, won't be difficult. Place cell samples and the Esper drug in the same secure container. Bring them together through remote control, then observe the results. Get to it!
When all was ready, they watched the results on a computer screen, from what everyone hoped was a safe distance. But for a long time, nothing seemed to be happening. Dukat was already rehearsing some credible-sounding excuses when everyone's head snapped around suddenly. Something had changed. There was something in the lab with them. Finn drew his gun. They all looked frantically around. There was nothing to be seen, but they were not alone. They could feel it. There was a presence, unfixed and unfamiliar, slowly suffusing through the lab. It was growing steadily stronger, as though approaching from very far away, from some unknown direction. It felt angry, dangerous, threatening. The whole lab began to shake. Tech exploded, collapsed in on itself, melted, and ran away. Fires broke out spontaneously all over the lab. Great dents appeared in the steel walls, as though something was beating on them with invisible fists. Strange voices emanated from the computer speakers. Dukat was trying to hide behind Finn, who swept his gun back and forth, searching for a target. The temperature in the lab suddenly plummeted, as though something was sucking all the warmth out of it. And slowly, remorselessly, something began to manifest. It wasn't in any way human, and none of them could bear to look at it. Finn put away his gun, unclipped a grenade from his belt, and threw it at the chamber holding the activated cell samples. The presence snapped off, still unformed, gone as though it had never been there. The laboratory slowly grew still again.
Well, I don't think we'll try that again. Dukat, where? Ah, there you are. Would I be right in assuming those were the very last untreated cell samples you had?
I'm afraid so, Sir Durandal. The procedures we had to use were very destructive, as I advised you. And since we destroyed the bodies on your instructions, there won't be any more. And I can't help feeling that's probably a good thing.
You never were very ambitious.
The energy beam had punched right through the chest of the nearest clone. Finn looked around him, smiling easily.
Just a little reminder to do better in the future. I reward success, but I always punish failure. So keep yourselves busy until I have other work for you. And Dukat, what do you think that was, that thing we summoned?
I think That might have been Random or Journey's ghost, Sir Durandal.
What a remarkable age we do live in, Dukat. Better have the lab exercised, just in case.
Emma Steele was standing on her head in one corner of her room, doing her breathing exercises. It never failed. It was the end of another long day, and she'd been looking forward to a little quiet relaxation before she crashed out on her bed, and now some poor fool had turned up to annoy her. If it was another representative from the church militant come to ask her aggressively about the state of her soul, Emma decided she was going to see how many times she could get him to bounce as she threw him down the stairs. She regained her feet, stalked over to the door, and scowled through the viewer. On the other side of the door, she was surprised to see Stuart Lennox, the young paragon from Viramond. She hadn't thought he was talking to her. Even more surprising, he showed clear signs of having been crying recently. Very recently. This was going to be complicated. She just knew it. She gave Stuart her best cold glare.
It's been a very long day, and I can't believe you've come all this way at this late hour to bring me good news. So what's happened?
His eyes were red and puffy, and all the self-respect had gone out of him. He looked like a child dressed up in Paragon's armor.
It's all gone wrong, Emma. You have to help me.
Give me one good reason.
You're the only one who can help.
Why don't you go to your good friend, Finn Durandal?
Stuart just stood there, as though he didn't even have the strength left to raise his hands to his face. Emma raised her eyes to the heavens and stepped back.
Oh, all right, get in here before the neighbors see you. And stop that sniveling. You're a paragon.
Stuart tried hard to get control, rubbing at his nose with the back of his hand as he entered Emma's apartment. He walked as though there was something broken inside him, and all but fell into the nearest chair. Emma looked quickly up and down her corridor. She stood over Stuart, hands on hips, and tried not to scowl.
Talk to me, Lennox. What's happened?
When you're training to be a paragon, they teach you how to fight anything except yourself, your own heart, your own needs. I thought I knew what I was getting into, but I was wrong. So wrong. Did you just hear something? Was there anyone outside in the hall? No, of course not. You'd have said something. Sorry. I don't mean to be so jumpy, but Finn's people are everywhere these days. I don't think he knows what's happened yet, but he will. And then, I did everything I could think of to make sure I wasn't followed here, but it's so hard to be sure of anything anymore.
Emma wanted to take him by the shoulders and give him a good shaking, but she had a feeling he might collapse entirely if she did. It disturbed her to see a fellow paragon so beaten down. She pulled up a chair and sat opposite him.
Brace up. No matter how bad things are, never despair. That's one of the first things you're supposed to learn as a paragon.
Stuart smiled again, but there was no humor in it.
Being a paragon doesn't mean what it used to.
Emma sighed, but kept it internal. She knew when a long story was on its way.
All right, Lennox. From the beginning.
Stuart swallowed hard and made a visible effort to pull himself together. His chin came up, and his eyes finally met hers squarely.
Something happened tonight at the Sangreal. Something bad. I know you warned me, but things have been getting worse there. You can't imagine the things I've seen. The things I've seen paragons doing. No one else drinks in the Sangreal anymore. Just paragons back from their quest. Even the groupies are afraid to go in there now. The Paragons have been exploring more extreme pleasures. And no one dares to say anything. I knew some of these people from before. And they've changed. They've all changed. Men and women who used to be my heroes doing vile things. It got so bad I wouldn't go there unless I was with Finn. I felt safe with Finn. But even though he never joined in and never let him touch me, he never did anything to stop it either. I think it amused him. You have to understand, I was trained as a warrior on Viramond. I've done my share of fighting, killed men when I had to, part of the job. And I've seen evil men do evil things for money or power just because they could. But tonight, tonight, Finn sent me to the Sangreal alone. He needed an urgent message delivered in person, and he had business elsewhere. I didn't want to go, but I couldn't say no. I didn't want to appear afraid in front of him. He laughed and clapped me on the shoulder, said I'd be all right. When I got there, the owner of the bar was making a stand. He said he'd had enough, that no amount of money was worth putting up with the Paragon's behavior anymore. He called them animals to their faces, said they sickened him. He wanted the money he was owed, and he wanted the Paragons out of his bar so he could get his old trade back. He wanted his life back. The Paragons laughed at him. There was drink and drugs and other things going on. The bar owner said if they wouldn't leave, he'd go to the media. Tell them everything. All the awful things he'd seen. His bar security cameras had all kinds of interesting footage. The Paragons looked at each other. Nothing was said, but they came to a decision. They got up and advanced on the bar owner, surrounding him. I thought they were just gonna push him around, intimidate him. They took out their knives and cut him to pieces. Slowly, so they could enjoy it. He screamed and screamed. I tried to stop him, but two Paragons came out of nowhere and grabbed me, forced me to my knees, and they made me watch the man die by inches, screaming all the way. When it was finally over, and he was dead, they cut him open, and they ate him. Ate his flesh, his organs, and they laughed. With blood running from their mouths, they laughed. They made me eat too. Eat the flesh. I had to. They would have killed me if I hadn't. They gave me one of his eyes and his tongue. Said they were delicacies. Then they let me go. I ran. That was 2 hours ago. I went home and cleaned myself up. But I still feel dirty. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't go to Finn. They're his people. They're allowed to do anything. And then I thought of you. You're the only one left I can trust. The last real Paragon. The only one who might be able to do something.
Dear God. What happened to them out there on their quest? What did they find that could have changed them so much?
Emma shook her head slowly and then looked firmly at Stuart, putting a steadying hand on his shoulder.
I'll look into this. You go home. Lock the door and stay there. No one has to know you've talked to me. In the meantime, stay away from the Sangreal and from Finn.
I can't.
Come on, Stuart. Surely you can see now what kind of a man he is. He's no good for you.
But I love him. I love him.
Emma finally got him calmed down enough to leave, and then she strode restlessly back and forth in her apartment, trying to work out what to do next. The Paragons had gone too far now. The heroes of old had become monsters, and they had to be stopped. But she couldn't just barge into the Sangreal and accuse them. They'd had plenty of time to hide the evidence. They'd call her a liar to her face and laugh at her. No. She'd have to do this the hard way. Follow them, spy on them, gather hard evidence that couldn't be overlooked or buried. And for that, she was going to need her new ally, the reporter Nina Malapert. All it took was a short vid call and a few dark hints, and Nina was on her way.
Another exclusive! Emma Steele's very own private home life! Gosh, darling, Channel 279 would kill for material like this! Not that you'd want to appear there, Emma dear. Very downmarket and tray tacky. They probably want pictures of you in a bubble bath, showing your bosoms and doing something suggestive with a loofah.
Nina stopped in the middle of the room and looked about her, frowning prettily.
I have to say, it's all rather Spartan, isn't it, darling? I mean, these furnishings are so last week, and you haven't even got any little bits and pieces to give the place character. Everyone has a few little bits and pieces. Tell me you've at least got some stuffed animals in your bedroom.
Just the one. Head of a hobhound. I shot and stuffed it myself.
Oh. A little bird told me on the way up here that you've had a gentleman caller. Very young and very fit, but looking totally miserable. Be honest now. Have there been tears and tantrums? Is someone on the way out? Is someone new on the horizon? Is he a celebrity? Tell me everything, darling.
Nina, calm down. And sit down, please.
The young journalist reminded Emma irresistibly of her younger sister back on Mistworld, always eager to get involved in everything, especially when it involved scandal and excitement.
Nina, this could be the biggest story of your career, but what I have in mind is very dangerous, and I need to be sure you understand the risks.
Nina sat bolt upright in her chair, wide-eyed and quivering with excitement, as Emma laid out the bare bones of the story for her.
Well, honestly, darling, this is utterly wonderful! It's got everything! Sex, politics, treason, and a touch of gore for the tabloid shows. We could sell the rights to this story for enough money to retire on. We're talking mini-series here. I wonder who they'll get to play me. Don't look at me like that, darling. The wind will change and your face will get stuck that way. I know, it's all very serious and dangerous and all that, but one of us has to concentrate on the business side or we'll get screwed over the contracts. It's a jungle out there these days. So, what's the plan? Does it involve shooting lots of people? Should I go home and change into something that doesn't matter if I get blood on it?
Take a deep breath, Nina. You're hyperventilating. This is going to be a fact-finding mission and nothing more. What do you know about Paragons?
Well, absolutely everyone's been keeping an eye on them recently, darling. From a respectable distance, of course. There's all kinds of stories about the things they've been getting up to since they all came home with their tails between their legs. But no one knows anything for sure. I've been doing some research, or rather I haven't, but I have persuaded this sweet young boy at the office to do it for me. It seems that all but a handful of the Paragons have returned from the quest now, and none of them found even a sniff of Owen or Hazel. Everyone's been chasing stories about them doing terrible things, but there's never any proof or any witnesses, or at least none willing to speak out, even for really impressive sums up front. The few times someone has gotten a piece together, one of Finn's people would turn up and have a quiet word with the editor, and the story would be quietly spiked as not in the public interest.
Finn doesn't own all the media.
No, darling, but he does scare the shite out of most of it. No one's going to risk going head-to-head with the Durandal over anything less than a totally watertight story. And that's where we come in. I'm going to be Journalist of the Year. They'll give me my own chat show for this.
They'll cut off your head and dump your body in the waste pits if we get caught.
Well, yes, there is that. According to my researcher, sweetie, all the usual Paragon groupies and hangers-on have run for their lives. Ordinary people don't go into the Sangreal anymore. Or if they do, they have a distressing tendency not to come out again. No one knows what they do with the bodies. The rest of the street have abandoned their homes and businesses. They couldn't stand listening to the screaming anymore. And all of this is happening just down the road from the House of Parliament, with the Imperial Champion's knowledge and support. So you see, I am taking this seriously, darling. I just believe in seeing the positive side of things as well. Like if we pull this off successfully, we're going to be rich, rich, rich!
She jumped up and did a little happy dance in the middle of the room.
Bitch, I'm gonna be rich. I think I've discovered a taste for real journalism, darling. No more puff pieces and horoscopes for me. So, what do we do first?
Well, to start with, we're not going anywhere near the Sangreal until we've got a better idea of what's really going on. These people were heroes once. The best of the best. Some were my friends. Something specific must have happened to change them so drastically. According to your news channel, one of the last few paragons to return from the quest, Miracle Grant, landed at the main starport just a few hours ago. He wouldn't give any interviews, which is almost unheard of for Grant, but he did say he hadn't found Owen or Hazel either. There has to be a connection.
Emma looked at the viewscreen curiously. Most people knew better than to bother her when she was off duty. She accepted the call and scowled at the screen.
This had better be really important.
The face on the screen was female, oriental, the left half covered with a series of intricate overlapping tattoos. She wore her hair in a black buzz cut, her mouth was a severe pink rosebud, and her eyes were dark and fierce. A single, razor-edged throwing star dangled from one earlobe.
I'm Rachel Chergiro Random. I'm one of Random's bastards, and you need to hear what I have to say, Paragon.
That'll be the day. I take it there's no point in trying to trace this call.
What do you think? I'm calling from the Rookery, and that's all you need to know. Now shut up and listen. I know things you need to know.
Emma folded her arms across her chest.
Convince me.
I'm a Random's bastard, and proud of it. Direct descent from Jack Random. Disowned by both sides of my adopted family ever since I discovered at a young age my God-given talent for parting fools from their money. I'm a career criminal, and proud of it. But there are lines even I won't cross. I speak for all Random's bastards in this. The Durandal has desecrated Random's and Journey's graves in the Victory Gardens. The bodies were dug up and then destroyed with transmutation bombs. Sacrilege! We're all mad as hell. And we want revenge. We can't take on the Durandal. But maybe you can.
Get to the point. What have you got to tell me?
Miracle Grant's come into the Rookery. Supposedly to meet with Finn. Get here fast and you'll catch them together. Word is, they're going to be discussing things they wouldn't dare discuss anywhere else. Interested?
Give me directions. And then get the hell out of my way.
Emma Steele and Nina Malapert made their way into the Rookery, disguised under heavy cloaks and hollow faces, with just enough hints about them to suggest they were two well-off ladies slumming it in the Rookery for pleasures unobtainable in the more civilized parts of the city. They kept to the side streets and the shadows and avoided contact with anyone. Miracle Grant wasn't difficult to find. He strutted through the Rookery streets as though he owned them, and everyone gave him plenty of room. No one dared to touch a man under Finn's blessing, even if he was a hated paragon. And besides, there was something odd about the man. Something off. He wore his armor sloppily, and he was seriously overweight. His eyes were wild and dancing, and he laughed a lot, even when there was nothing obviously funny to laugh at. He took food from a market stall without paying, and crammed it into his mouth with both hands as he strode along. Emma and Nina followed him discreetly through the crowded streets, keeping well back.
That's Miracle Grant? God, he's really let himself go.
Something's seriously wrong here. The Grant I knew was always a fop and a dandy, immaculately turned out with never a hair out of place. Hell, the man was an epicure of the first rank. There's no way he'd lower himself to eat street food.
So, are we going to drag him into a back alley and beat some answers out of him?
Emma looked at her.
We?
Well, all right then. You. I have to handle the camera.
We stick to following him. I need to know what he's doing here. I also want to be sure this isn't some kind of a trap. Never trust a Random's bastard.
Miracle Grant went back and forth in the Rookery, talking to really unpleasant people in really unpleasant places. No one seemed pleased to see him, but no one was stupid enough to object either. He was Finn's man, and he was a paragon. And both were scary things these days. Finally, he came to a small bar in a back street and went in. Emma and Nina watched from an alleyway on the other side of the street, but some time passed, and he didn't come out.
We can't risk going in ourselves. See that window on the second floor partway open? Can you get your camera in through there?
Ah, piece of cake. And I have state-of-the-art stealth protocols. They'll never hear it coming.
She concentrated, and her camera emerged from under her cloak and flew swiftly up to the second floor window. It slipped easily through the gap, and then Nina guided it delicately downstairs until she could see into the main bar.
Got it! Grant's in there with three others. All in Paragon gear.
Plug me in. I need to know what's happening in there. And be sure to record everything on a remote link. This could be evidence.
I'm gonna have to get in really close for that, darling. You will pay for a new camera if anything goes wrong, won't you? I'm not made of money, you know. And I can't get insurance since I started hanging around with you.
Yes, yes, get on with it.
And I should point out that stealth fields are technically quite illegal for news cameras. You do promise this won't come back to haunt me later?
If you don't get a move on, you'll be the one who's doing the haunting.
Bully.
Emma and Nina plugged into what the camera was seeing through their comlinks, and a window opened up before their eyes, showing the interior of the bar. The camera had to stick to the shadows up by the ceiling, but its picture came through clear enough. Miracle Grant was drinking brandy straight from the bottle at the bar. Three other paragons were keeping him company. Emma knew them all. Good men by reputation. But in this backstreet bar, they laughed and drank and behaved like animals. They didn't seem to have anything important to say to each other. They were waiting. And then Finn Girondal walked through the door, and Emma and Nina both jumped. They'd been so taken up with what they were seeing that they hadn't even seen Finn approaching. The four paragons fell silent as Finn entered the bar. He smiled on them all, and they looked flatly back at him. There was a sense of Finn's being surrounded by a wolf pack that would turn on him the moment he showed any sign of weakness. Finn knew this and wasn't in any way disturbed. If anything, he seemed amused.
Well, my friends, how are we today? Been having a good time?
Why couldn't we meet in the Sangreal as usual?
Because you've all been very naughty. Reduced poor little Stuart to tears. Can't I leave you people alone for a minute?
You promised us action. You promised us revenge. You promised us blood and slaughter and the evening of scores. We're tired of sitting around, only let out to play bodyguard and run errands for you, like so many puppy dogs.
Are you saying you haven't been enjoying yourselves? Because of me, the elves finally got to possess their greatest enemies, the paragons, and destroy their reputations while indulging yourselves in every vice and whim that comes to you. The paragons are your slaves, aware of the evil you do with their bodies, but unable to stop you. They suffer the hell you've made for them, and all because of me. Oh, there's just no gratitude anymore.
We're still waiting for the bill. The elves know better than to trust Finn Durandal. Oh,
you're not still mad at me for betraying you at the Parade of the Paragons, are you? It was all part of the plan, to get you where you are now.
Finn turned his back on them and headed unhurriedly for the door.
That S-blocker won't protect you forever, Durandal.
Finn left the bar without replying. Out in the street, Emma and Nina watched Finn walk away. Nina shut down her camera and called it back. She and Emma looked at each other.
I should have known. I should have known.
Elves! Elves possessing paragons! Story of the century! We've got to get this on the air, Emma.
If we'd gone in there ourselves, we'd be dead now. Up close, those telepaths would have identified us immediately.
Nina looked quickly at the bar, as her camera returned to nestle under her cloak again. She patted it absently, like a good dog.
Can they sense us from in there?
No, possessing a thrall limits their range considerably.
Emma, we have to tell someone!
Hush, girl, and let me think. We can't just go public with what your camera recorded. Even if we could find someone brave enough to run it, Finn would just say it was faked, a smeared job by his enemies. Most people haven't heard what the Paragons are doing. Finn's seen to that. and then he'd have elves possess us, and we'd stand up and say yes, it was all faked. We'd be very convincing. And then we'd kill ourselves for shame, and the elves would laugh themselves sick. I'd better get S-blockers for both of us, just in case. We can't afford to have anyone peeking into our thoughts.
Isn't private ownership of S-blockers illegal these days?
I have contacts.
Oh, the great Emma Steele breaking the law. Now that really would be an exclusive. Pity I'll probably never be able to run it.
They shared a small smile.
There must be someone we can show this to. The people have to know what's going on.
The elf's involvement changes everything. I don't know who I can trust anymore. Anyone could be possessed. Anyone. We're going to need allies. Powerful allies. Normally I'd go to the Oversoul for help, but Finn's driven them away.
Emma looked at Nina.
Is that why he did that? Is he really thinking that far ahead?
Darling, I'm starting to get a little scared.
Good. It'll keep you sharp, keep you safe. Look, we're better off now than we were. At least now we know what's going on. The world is starting to make sense again. Finn got rid of the Oversoul because they could have exposed what's happening. It was probably also part of the deal he made with the elves to make up for the massacre of their people at the Parade of the Paragons. And he's got rid of the only people who could have exposed him for what he is.
Isn't there any way we can get at him?
He must know this alliance can't last. The elves hate his guts. They'll turn on him first chance they get. Finn's playing a very dangerous game.
I say we just lob a grenade into the Sangreal and kill the lot of them.
Tempting, but no. We can't attack the Paragons directly. We'd only kill the possessed bodies. The elf minds would escape. We have to find a way to drive the elves out of their thralls and rescue the Paragons.
You don't want much, do you?
You! Who are you? What are you doing here?
Emma and Nina looked around sharply to see Miracle Grant glaring at them from the door of the bar. Emma grabbed Nina by the wrist.
Let's go.
And ran like hell.
After them!
They couldn't let the elf get too close and learn who they were from their thoughts. Grant pounded after them. And the other Paragons came boiling out of the bar to join the pursuit. Emma reached into a concealed pocket and pulled out a mind bomb. Utterly illegal on Logris, but still in common use on Mistworld. Emma believed in being properly prepared and not letting trifling little technicalities get in the way of doing her job. She charged down the street, Nina plunging gamely along beside her. Emma primed the mind bomb, let it fall to the ground, and kept running. Just as the Paragons reached it, the bomb detonated. Its vicious energies sweated through their minds, disrupting all mental activity in its limited range. The Paragons staggered to a halt as elf and host mind were both thrown into confusion. By the time the elf minds were back in control, their prey was long gone. Backstage at the House of Parliament, in one of the many small rooms where all the real work of government was done, Anne Barclay and the clone James were working on the text for his next big speech. The Esper condemnation speech had gone down really well, and Finn wanted to be sure he had a good follow-up ready to go. James had no strong feelings about Espers one way or another. He just said what he was told to say, but still, he felt a certain relief that they wouldn't be around to threaten him anymore. Any Esper who got close enough might have unmasked him and revealed who and what he really was. He didn't hate them or even necessarily want them dead. He just wanted them out of his life. James wasn't actually shallow, just inexperienced, but the result was the same. He could see things as important only when they affected him personally. His next big speech would be a clarion call for the House to remove the aliens' votes and restrict all alien movement within the Empire for the duration of the emergency. Most of the aliens had already withdrawn their representatives from the House anyway, but the measure would make pure humanity happy, and Finn needed another scapegoat to focus popular resentment on, now that the Espers were gone. Besides, with the Terror coming, humanity couldn't afford to have potential enemies at its back. Better that all the alien species be subdued and controlled, and this speech would be an important step in that direction. Again, James didn't care. He was just following orders. Anne soon had the speech whipped into shape and sat back from the table and smiled just a little exasperatedly at James.
Oh,
You know, this would go a lot faster if you could contribute something now and again. Help me tailor the words more to your particular speech rhythms, for example. Even change the words to fit your own style. You're allowed to have opinions. You don't have to be just a mouthpiece for Finn's words.
Really? I thought that was exactly what I was created for. Finn's already made it very clear, on several painful occasions, that he doesn't want me to think for myself. I'm just a puppet, something for Finn to speak through in public. So on the whole, I feel most secure when I don't have to think about what I'm saying. When I can just play the part and not have to worry about who I really am, or what I might think, given the chance. I am not James. The more I read up on my progenitor, the more clear it becomes that he wouldn't have put up with this shit for a moment. He was always his own man, and proud of it. But if I'm not James, who am I? Who am I when the lights go out and there's no one there but me? Give me a speech to deliver, and I'm fine. Ask me to strike a pose, flash a smile, act the king in waiting, and I can do that. Easy, no problem. But even now, when it's just me speaking to you, the words sound more like James Campbell than the few poor personal thoughts that drift through my mind. It's easier to act James than be myself, whoever that might be. Is there any me anymore?
Hush now. Shh. It's all right.
And comforted him as she always did, by taking him in her arms and rocking him gently back and forth, and he clung to her like a child. But this time, when she was ready to let go, he held on.
Anne.
They looked at each other, their faces very close, and then James kissed her impulsively on the mouth. Anne was honestly surprised. She still had trouble remembering that she was beautiful now, and that a man could be attracted to her. And anyway, James was off limits. Finn had made that very clear. Anne kissed James back and put her arms around him again, and let the passion rise within her.
Why not? James never knew the old me. As far as he knows, I've always been beautiful. And it's time I had something for myself. Something that doesn't come from Finn.
James was actually shy with her, and Anne had to lead him on, encourage him, coax him, teach him. It was a new role for her, and one she enjoyed. She locked the door and had him lie down on his back on the floor. And then she straddled him, and they made fierce, almost brutal love. And James's open adoration allowed Anne to be the kind of woman she'd always wanted to be, aggressive and wanton. It was good, so very good. And it wasn't as if she was doing anything wrong. No one was getting hurt. She was building his confidence as he built hers. Two orphaned souls who had no one but each other. But Anne was still very inexperienced in some ways. Afterwards, as they lay in each other's arms, thinking their private thoughts, if Anne had taken the trouble to look directly into James's eyes, she might have seen something. Something to make her wonder how genuine James's motives really were. Whether perhaps he was clever enough and cold enough to use her to break him away from Finn's control. But she didn't look, and neither did he. Elsewhere, in a room of no importance, the Shadow Court was in session. No comforting hollow of the Empress Lionstone this time, no clever recreation of her savage court. Most of their old meeting places had been discovered and overrun, and many of their supporters had been lured away by the more promising causes of pure humanity and the Church Militant. Only a few still kept to the old faith and the return of the families. The Shadow Court still had money and influence, and a handful of dedicated souls still ready to kill or die for the cause, but the movement had become, ironically, just a shadow of its previous self. 9 men and women, carefully anonymous in enveloping black cloaks, faces hidden behind artfully embellished black masks of silk and metal and leather, were all that remained of the ruling elite. And they came together around a bare table in a bare room to argue about money. The Shadow Court's most successful attempt to re-establish interest in the old families had been the creation of that most popular vid soap, The Quality. It had become amazingly successful, bringing in profits so great that not even vid company accountants had been able to hide them all. The elite of the Shadow Court were now all incredibly, embarrassingly rich, and some of them were determined to stay that way.
The Quality works fine as it is. I see no reason to change anything.
And I say we've lost track of what the Quality was meant to be.
The woman was in a black mask, liberally spotted with sequins. She fanned herself angrily with a paper fan decorated with erotic images.
The Quality was designed from the beginning to be propaganda, a way of spreading our message to the masses. It was always intended to be a means to an end, never an end in itself.
But it's become the most successful soap in vid history.
This man was decadently fat and sat in an anti-grav chair.
And you propose to spoil everything by forcing more politics into the scripts, making them much more overt and risk losing our target audience. For the first time in generations, we are all as rich as our families used to be. I won't have you rocking the boat in the name of ideological purity. The Quality spreads our message well enough as it is. Because of it, the families are more fashionable than ever. What's wrong with that?
Fashionable? Fashions change, fads come and go. We're supposed to be in this for the long run. Who cares whether the families are popular? We're supposed to be feared and respected.
The rich are feared and respected. That's good enough for me.
A woman with a mask shaped like a bird of prey inclined her head.
You've become corrupted by wealth. The vid show is a cult thing, nothing more, and the masses will drop it fast enough once they find something else to obsess over. We have to push our message as strongly as we can now while we still have an audience watching.
Easy for you to give up the money. Not all of us were born rich. We earned this money. It's ours.
And so the argument went on, while Tel Markham, member for Madriguda, watched wearily from behind his black leather mask. He could see both sides of the question, but in the end he'd always known that power was more important than money. If you had enough power, people would give you money. It didn't always work the other way around. Power was why he'd joined the Shadow Court, along with several other secret organizations. He couldn't seem to summon up the passion or the interest to get involved in the argument himself. Truth be told, he was getting bored with the Shadow Court. They did less and less, and squabbled more and more. They were all talk, and he got enough of that at Parliament.
Go! Freeze! Nobody move a bloody inch! Stay right where you are and keep both hands in the air!
The soldiers quickly surrounded the 9 men and women, covering them with energy weapons as they stared frantically around, their eyes wide behind their masks. And that was when Finn Durandal strolled casually into the room.
Hi! Good to be here in this, actually, rather squalid little room. Oh, please, don't anyone get up, or I'll have you shot. Now, some of you aren't as surprised as the others because you invited me here. Oh, yes, a few of you decided they were more interested in being rich than anything else, and contacted me, telling me where this little meeting would take place. The idea being that I would arrest those of you who cared more about politics and leave the rest of you to get on with being very rich. Well, bad luck, people. I've come for all of you. There are far too many factions in the Empire these days, and frankly, I don't need the distraction. So I'm shutting down the Shadow Court. Show trials, character assassination, followed by very public executions. You know, the sort of thing your aristocratic forebears were always so very fond of in Lionstone's time. And with the head gone, what's left of the body will soon wither and die. Feel free to speak up and object, and I'll feel free to have you shot as an example to the others.
How typical. The families betrayed by their own kind. It seems we have learned nothing from history after all, but I trust we can at least show solidarity one last time. We can't afford to be arrested and identified. Our families would be made to suffer. Better to go out with dignity in one last act of defiance. We can still serve the cause as martyrs. Agreed?
And around the table, eyes met and heads nodded, and hands went to transmutation bombs under their cloaks.
Fanatics. At least it saves the expense of trials. What matters is that they're all dead. Except for you, sir.
Tel Markham, the last surviving member of the Shadow Court hierarchy, removed his black leather mask and bowed courteously to Finn. The Girondol raised a single eyebrow in surprise and nodded back. Tel smiled easily.
I am no fanatic, Sir Champion. For me, it was always about me, what I was going to get out of it. I hope I can convince you that a show trial might not be the best thing in my case.
Go on, give it a try.
I am a member of Parliament, Sir Durandal, and a member of Pure Humanity, and brother to Angelo Bellini, the Angel of Madraguda, and current head of the Church Militant. That's a whole lot of people I could persuade to be more supportive of you. Plus, I know things, and I know people, all of which could be very useful to you.
Not bad. I don't actually need you or any of the things you offer, but you speak well, and I've missed having someone around to boast to since Brett and Rose ran out on me, the wimps. You look like you're made of sterner stuff. So, I think I'll adopt you. Assuming that you, as sole surviving creator and producer of the quality, agree to sign over all your interest in the show to me. I can use it to push my own propaganda, to influence and inflame popular opinion, as and when I find it necessary or amusing. And I can always use the money. I have so many people on the payroll these days.
Really, you have no idea.
Do you have any problem with giving me the show?
Not in the least.
Tel knew a foregone conclusion when it was staring down the barrel of a disruptor aimed at him. At least Finn didn't know about his membership in the Hellfire Club. The tables might yet be turned someday in all kinds of interesting ways. In the Great House of Parliament, business went on as usual. Most of the MPs were present, mostly because they had nowhere else to be. The alien section was practically deserted. The clone representative was doing his best to look interested in the slow-moving debate. Shub watched it all through a single robot. And Douglas, king and speaker to Parliament, sat slumped on his throne, thinking of something else. Business as usual in the House in these last dog days of civilization.
My colleagues, if I might have a moment of your time.
Mira Puri, member for Malediction, took the floor. She held her head high and glared at Douglas, one hand gripping the throat of her sari so tightly that her knuckles showed white.
Your Majesty, distinguished members, I implore this august body to remember and reflect upon the moral...
Mira Puri had no intention of being ignored by anyone. She had a speech to make on the people's rights and the need for tolerance in the Empire and everyone working together. She launched into it with all her skill and verve, and after a while, the best she could say was at least the other members weren't jeering at her. It was a hot, close day, and perhaps they just didn't have the energy. A few heckled half-heartedly from the backbenches, probably Neumann stooges trying to score points with their superiors. Douglas did nothing to stop them. Mira plowed on with her speech, because someone had to say it. The House might not be what it once was, but there was still the chance it could be turned around, awakened to its responsibilities by the right words, the right ideals. The House still mattered. Mira Puri believed that with all her heart and soul. She had to believe that, or her whole life meant nothing. She remembered working doggedly with her limited staff in their tiny official backstage office, rewriting and polishing her speech again and again to make it as powerful as possible. She had to wake the sleeping conscience of the house, but she was tired. They were all tired from struggling so hard against the current tides of public and private opinion. It was like all the world had gone mad. How could everything have gone so wrong so quickly? It had been a golden age, and some would say it still was. But Mira could see the tarnish.
This is the real threat to humanity.
When she finished her speech, no one applauded, no one jeered. They just sat there and looked at her in silence. Some of Mira's strength seemed to go out of her then, and she almost stumbled as she returned to her seat and sat down. It wasn't that they hadn't listened. They had, and didn't care. None of them gave a damn for the old values anymore, except for Ruth Lee, and she was a fanatic. Even the Paragons were corrupt these days, if gossip were to be believed. Except for Emma Steele, of course. But when all was said and done, she was just a barbarian from Mistworld and couldn't be expected to understand the importance of politics. Probably out there right now arresting a mugger and thinking she was making a difference. And as for the king, it seemed that bitch Flowers had broken his spirit as well as his heart.
Sorry to be a bother. Pardon me?
Tel Markham, member from Madriguda, arrived late as always, murmuring apologies to everyone as he edged along the crowded benches to his seat. He settled himself comfortably and put on his best listening face while he privately concentrated on his own business. He had a lot to think about. The rest of the house was watching him surreptitiously because he'd not only arrived late, he'd arrived with Finn Durandal. And the Imperial Champion had smiled on Tel and patted him on the shoulder, in public. So everyone else was now thinking furiously about what that meant, because to be in with Finn was the ambition of practically everyone in the house. The Durandal was where the power was these days, and everyone knew it. No one was really all that surprised at Tel's new friendship. He'd always been famous for landing on his feet. And he had, after all, intrigued with every member and every faction in the house at one time or another, and often simultaneously. But Tel was thinking of Finn's last words to him as they walked through the corridors of the house together. Out of nowhere, it seemed, Finn had offered to make Tel the new head of the Church Militant, replacing his brother, Angelo Bellini. It seemed Finn saw the increasingly messianic Angel of Madriguda as both a burden and a distraction. All Tel had to do was say the word, and the angel would have a regrettable but very fatal accident, and ascend to heaven on wings of prayer. Tel had smiled and nodded, and said he'd have to think about it. Now here he was, thinking, and torn between ambition, self-preservation, and family ties. Finn's offer was both a reward and a test of his loyalty. He knew that. And Finn knew he knew.
Poor Angelo. You never could hold on to anything I decided I wanted, could you, little brother? The question is, do I want it? Politics is one thing, religion quite another.
Tel wasn't particularly religious any more than he was particularly political, but he could see how the Church Militant properly handled could be turned into a real power base, quite separate from the Durandal. He could become a mover and a shaker in the new order of things. And all he had to do was agree to the murder of a brother he'd never liked much anyway. It should have been a simple decision, and Tel was honestly surprised to discover that it wasn't. He'd always thought of himself as a practical man, but this would require a cold-bloodedness that was new, even to him. And besides,
what will I tell Mother?